You're tuned to the Curb Your Dogma podcast. And now here is your dangerously underqualified host, Dr. Maury Robertson.
A whole bunch of Christians, about 40% of conservatives, believe that Adam and Eve were the first human beings created in a universe that is less than 10,000 years old. And that's just crazy. I'll tell you why in today's episode. Did Adam ride a dinosaur? Man, I've struggled with this one, guys. Well, actually, I struggle with all of these. These have all been huge shifts in my thinking that have taken place over time. But growing up, I mean, it was really simple. God made Adam and Eve, and then everybody descended from them. And just a nice, simple universe that was, you know, kind of human beings were at the center of it, and human beings were at the end of it. It was all about us. But the problem is that there's overwhelming evidence that the universe is much older than 10,000 years. In fact, the latest estimates are that the universe is 13.7 billion years old and the Earth 4.5 billion years. Now, that's not a slight discrepancy. That is two totally different ways of looking at things. Not only that, but Adam and Eve, the idea that the human race is descended from two individuals who existed on this world less than 10,000 years ago, is being completely disproven by the Human Genome Project. So what are we supposed to do with this? Well, I know a lot of Christians feel backed into a corner because they feel like if they accept this findings of science, that they have to abandon their faith. They're going against the Bible, right? On the other hand, if they accept science, then they got to throw their faith overboard. It's one or the other. Or as Albert Mohler, the president of Southern Seminary, put it, if Protestants want to accommodate science, fine. But they shouldn't be surprised if their faith unravels. So it's one or the other. But it's not one or the other. It's both. Much of this conflict is caused by a misunderstanding of Genesis 1 through 11. So today I want to tell you why these should be considered creation stories, and then describe the hopeless battle that began with the Enlightenment and suggest a solution. Let's talk about creation stories. Every culture has a creation story. The Greeks believed that Gaia, which is the Earth, sprang out of chaos and gave birth to Uranus, which means sky. The Cherokee Indians said a water beetle came from the sky, dove into the water, and brought up the earth. In a Hindu myth, four types of human beings emerge from the eternal Purusha. Now, there are hundreds of stories like this. In fact, there's a really cool Wikipedia article that lists them all that I link in the show notes. Take a look at those. But creation accounts, Every culture has one, and they are the ground beneath our feet. These are not part of human history, but they are the basis of human history. They are the foundation from which our lives flow and make sense. They provide a framework for life as we know it. If you look at these creation stories, it's pretty obvious that they're outside the realm of normal human experience. They take place in a far-off realm in some distant age. They're filled with characters and events that are unlike anything we experience here on Earth. They start with phrases like, a long time ago, or in the beginning. These set them apart from life as we know it. Now, creation stories might be different from human history, but there are bridges between the two. In some of the stories, divine beings interact with figures in human history. Genealogies tie historical figures with the prehistory, with their creation narratives. And towns and like sacred shrines and other things are named for characters in the stories. Religious rituals commemorate the events of the stories and bring them into the present. So creation stories are different from human history, but they are vitally connected to it. Again, they are the foundation from which human history as we experience it emerges. Are these creation stories true? Well, if by true you're asking whether you can put them on a timeline in human history, the answer is no. But if by true you're asking whether they convey truths that become the foundation of our existence, the answer is yes. Genesis 1 through 11 contains five creation stories. There are actually two creation accounts that are quite a bit different. There's the story of Cain and Abel, there's a tale of a great flood, and there's the Tower of Babel. Now, interspersed between these stories are genealogies, which build a bridge with human history. These stories, if you look at them, it's pretty obvious they're creation stories. They contain things like talking serpents, enchanted fruit, gods who have sex with human beings, giants, a boat that can carry every last animal. And by the way, the animals march up two by two onto this boat. These characters and events, as you read these stories, are clearly beyond the realm of human existence. But now in Genesis 12, there's a shift. The mythical element fades to the back and we meet Abraham, a man whose life can be dated to around 2000 BC. And then what follows is the story of his life and his family and how they became a nation. And so that's history. Now, of course, there are miraculous elements in this history, but these are in the background. We are definitely in the realm of human history in Genesis 12. But the Bible makes no sense without its creation stories. These lay the foundation for everything that follows. And, you know, I wish we could take time to look at them because they're so amazing. They're so fun to look at, and there's so much truth in them. But anyway, just some of the things that we learn in these stories is, well, that there's one God, the creator of all things. We learn that the creation is good, but that something has gone horribly wrong. We also learn that human rebellion is the heart of the problem in this world, and that God doesn't give up on his creation. We find that God can bring order out of chaos in, of course, the story of the great flood. We also see that judgment is a tool that God uses to redeem things. So many of the foundational truths of our faith emerge in these stories. Let me tell you now how the Enlightenment destroyed Christianity's credibility. See, the Enlightenment, which of course was around the 1500s, brought a new way of looking at the world. Throwing salt over your shoulder would not ward off evil spirits. Black cats weren't bad luck. Worms didn't spontaneously generate in rotting flesh. And so we started to explain things rationally. And we developed this sort of heady sense that we would soon know it all. The world, it seemed, was like a machine, and we could figure it out, and we could understand it and control it. Along the way, we kind of lost our imagination and forgot how to tell stories. In fact, we decided that these myths and stories were for children who really hadn't learned to live in the real world. So our imaginations kind of got replaced with gears. It's no surprise that in this kind of a setting, creation stories were viewed as just superstitions. The Bible put man at the center of everything, but obviously that wasn't true. Copernicus showed that the earth traveled around the sun, and wow, now we know the earth is just a speck of space dust in a vast sweep of universe. Geology, similarly, has proved that we're not only a speck of dust in space, we are a speck in time as well. Our 10,000 years are nothing compared with the age of the universe. And the Human Genome Project has shown there's no way that human beings could have evolved from a single couple less than 10,000 years ago. Clearly, the Bible's accounts of creation are not true. So we just throw them out, right? For five centuries, we have lived in an age of modernistic optimism. We assume that because we are learning to see more, that pretty soon we're going to see everything. We don't need creation accounts. We need more research. But this is a really naive assumption. There will always be questions we can never answer. What lies beyond the visible realm? And what came before that? And where is it all headed? And what's the point of it? What is love? No amount of research will answer these questions. We need a creation narrative. Now, I love the series The Cosmos. I love the original one back in the 70s with Carl Sagan, and I like the new one that's just come out more recently. But both of them begin with these words. The cosmos is all that is, or was, or ever will be. Well, okay, but that's a creation narrative. It goes like this. In the beginning was the cosmos. Then there was cosmos. And in the end, there will be cosmos. The fact that that's a dull story does not change the fact that it's a story. The opening line of Cosmos is a Trojan horse. It's a creation narrative cloaked as science to get past the gates. It tricks us into thinking that we are, like in our age, we're purely rational and scientific, and we've outgrown creation narratives. Now, again, I want to say science is wonderful. It expands our minds with new discoveries. It deepens our understanding of the universe. But to tell us where we came from or where it's all going, that's beyond the scope of science. So when Sagan says the cosmos is all there was or is or ever will be, he's not making an observation. He's telling a story. This Trojan horse has found a home in our culture. Most of us live by this story, even if we never stop to think about it. The myth that what we can perceive and understand is all that there is operates as an unspoken assumption. We think we are rational people living in the, quote, real world. We've outgrown the need for creation narratives. The truth is, we have embraced a creation story. As I said, creation stories aren't history, but they are the foundation of history. They set the course for human existence. So the cosmos story does the same thing, and frankly, it stinks. as a revelation or an explanation of all the things that science has come to understand and seen, cosmos series is wonderful. As a creation story, it sucks. It offers no answer to the things we most long to know. Where did I come from? Why am I here? What's the purpose of my life? What will happen when I die? Why bother being good? What is good, anyway? If the cosmos is all there is or was or ever will be, then my life is just a microscopic blip in time and space. The only thing that makes sense to do with my life is make the best of a bad situation, make a bucket list, and squeeze everything I can out of life before I die. Want to see the life that springs from the cosmos story? Just take a look around. We have never had more. I mean, look at us, we got everything, but we've never felt more empty, never been hungrier. Well, obviously, Christians have looked at this and we have kind of freaked out. And our response has been, I don't think it's too far to say, that it's been a disaster. You see, the cosmos is a creation story claiming to be history. It claims it needs no superstitious myths. What we should have done is call it on this. We should have pointed out that an eternal cosmos is nothing but a very dull creation story that lays the groundwork for a desolate human existence. Instead, what we did is we got obsessed with passing our own creation stories off as history. The results are downright embarrassing. The cosmos creation story masquerades as history a lot easier than the Genesis stories. When we start trying to tell the Genesis stories as history, we're backpedaling before we even start, trying to answer questions like, did Adam and Eve have belly buttons? Where did Cain get his wife? How do dinosaurs fit into the picture? Why is there evidence of other ancient human beings? Who are those giants in Genesis 6? And how did Noah fit all those animals onto the ark? And so, you know, we're just like burning all of our energy on these questions. I mean, organizations like CRI, the Creation Research Institutes, dedicate their lives to answering these questions. Others have gone so far as to build life-size arcs, complete with theme parks, trying to make the story believable. You know, look at us. We speak against the evils of modernism, but we're living by its tenets. We fear that if Genesis 1 through 11 is not part of human history, that Christianity will collapse. Evangelical leaders have led this charge. Mark Driscoll, former pastor of Mars Hill, he says, quote, "To deny the historical teachings of the church, that Adam and Eve were the first people, undermines the clear teaching of the Bible and fails to make sense of its storyline. As without historical Adam and Eve, there's no fall and no need for redemption and no need for Jesus. The very basis of Christianity is effectively undermined." Now, you got that, right? No Adam and Eve, literal historical Adam and Eve, no Christianity. That's his statement. Albert Mohler, quoting him again, he said, "Without a literal Adam, the work of Christ makes no sense whatsoever in Paul's description of the gospel, which is the classic description of the gospel we have in the New Testament. So no literal Adam, no gospel. So rather than embrace our creation narrative, we put all of our energy into trying to pull that narrative into human history. We wind up with the worst of both worlds, science as religion and religion as science. Now, there's a way to get past this, and it has to do with reading the Bible in the way it was intended. Frankly, most people read their morning newspaper with more sophistication than they read their Bible. See, when they read their paper, they get that there's different genres. There's news stories and political cartoons, opinion pieces, classified ads. You read all of those differently. So, for example, to ask whether a political cartoon is true or not, you wouldn't be asking, did it really happen? I mean, if someone asked you that about a political cartoon, you go like, what? You don't get it. You don't get the genre, right? See, we understand newspapers have different genres, but when it comes to the Bible, we allow only one, history. The fear is that if we allow anything else in there, the whole thing will dissolve into a fairy tale. But come on, the Bible is a library. It contains a wide variety of literature, history, myth, poetry, prophecy, apocalypses, just to name a few. Properly identifying the genre does not erode the credibility of the Bible, it establishes it. Genesis 1 through 11 should be taken as a collection of creation stories. Now, the Bible makes no sense without these stories, but we miss the point when we start asking whether or not these things, quote, really happened. In the same way that you miss the point when you ask whether a political cartoon, quote, really happened. People have argued that you gotta believe these as history, and in fact, in the Driscoll article and in some of Moeller's writings, these three arguments come to the fore. The first is that Jesus referred to Adam and Eve. So like in an argument with the Pharisees, he's talking to him about marriage, but he mentions Adam and Eve. It says in Mark 10, 6 through 8, from the beginning of creation, God made them male and female. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother, and the two shall become one flesh. The point they're making is that, hey, look, Jesus mentioned Adam and Eve. He talks about God making them male and female. And so since Jesus said that, it's historical. But that claim is ungrounded. The fact that Jesus quotes the stories in Genesis tells us nothing about how he regarded them. He may have regarded them as history. He may have regarded them as myth. Either way, he regarded them as true. Paul, it's kind of the same thing when it comes to Paul, but Paul also refers to Adam, and especially when he's talking about Christ, right? Because he calls Adam the first Adam, and he calls Christ the second Adam. And the whole point is that in Christ has come a new creation. There's a whole new age that has begun. I would call it the kingdom of God, right? Actually, Jesus did too. The kingdom has come in the new Adam, Jesus Christ. But of course, in the process of describing this, we have to talk about the old Adam. So, for example, in Romans 5:12, it says, through one man sin entered the world, and death through sin. Or in Acts 17, it says, he made from one person every nation of mankind to live on the face of the earth. Or in 1 Timothy 2:14, it says, it was not Adam who was deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. Okay, so Paul refers, like Jesus, to the creation narratives. But again, it's not necessary to assume that because Paul quotes the story of Adam and Eve, that he considered Adam to be a historical figure. My guess is he didn't think about this issue at all. His point was that Christ had triumphed over human sinfulness. So whether or not he regarded Adam as part of human history really makes no difference to his argument. Well, the third thing that's pointed out is the genealogies in the Bible. First, the genealogies in Genesis. Now, I want to just say just the fact that there are genealogies in Genesis 1 through 11 does not mean that these are necessarily should be considered as historical accounts. In the same way that I might tell a story that would include a real address and a real phone number, that doesn't mean that the story is necessarily meant to be taken as a historical description. Moving to the Gospels, Luke traces Jesus' genealogy back to Adam, and that's considered evidence that Adam was a historical figure. But Jewish genealogies were not like modern genealogies. For one thing, they weren't intended to be used to build chronologies. They didn't focus on giving every last name. Instead, they showed connections. For example, Matthew traced Jesus' roots back to Abraham because he wanted to show that Jesus was the Jewish Messiah. Luke was emphasizing Jesus as the Savior of all the nations, so he went all the way back to Adam. So did Luke believe in a historical Adam? Maybe yes, maybe no, I don't know. See, his geology might just be a bridge that connects the prehistory of Genesis with human history. I doubt whether Luke ever asked or cared whether Adam was a historical figure. His point was that Jesus emerged from the same human matrix that we did. The Genesis stories are true. Even though we can't place a person named Adam or a giant flood or a Tower of Babel on a timeline, the energy we spend trying to convert prehistory into history is self-defeating. We should abandon this modernistic assumption that we don't need creation stories, that we can just describe everything as human history. That is arrogance of the highest magnitude. The idea that all we are and all we see is all that is. No, we should embrace these biblical accounts. They lay the foundation for the coming of Christ and a rich life in the kingdom of God. Of course, the fear is that if we take Genesis 1 through 11 as creation stories, well, that will give us license to also look at the Gospels, the accounts of Jesus' life, and take those as stories as well. And frankly, that fear is well-founded because many people have taken that step. They've said, yeah, in the same way that Genesis 1 through 11 are stories that contain truths but didn't really happen, well, Jesus was probably some guy in history, but the Gospels are a bunch of stories and legends that evolved around his life, and they contain truths, but we shouldn't get all hung up about, really believing they actually happened. The problem here is that the Gospels are not presented this way. We do violence, I think, to Genesis 1 through 11 when we read them as history. In the same way, we do violence to the Gospels when we read them as myth. Now, you could call the Gospel writers crazy, but they really believe that they are describing things that happened in human history. And I fully admit, this is a whopper, because what they're saying is that God became flesh, that God entered history to redeem it. They describe Jesus as this person who had divine power and rose from the dead. It sounds like the stuff of myth, but the claim that it is not myth is precisely their point. In Jesus, they say, the transcendent realm has entered the human realm. There has been this coming together of the eternal and the temporal, the human and the divine. Now, you have every right not to believe this, but what you don't have the right to do is ignore their intent and label what they clearly meant to be history as myth. Well, just a few final words then. Do I believe the earth is less than 10,000 years old? No. Is the Bible's creation story true? Yes. Were Adam and Eve the first two people created a few thousand years ago? No. Is the story of Adam and Eve true? Yes. Was there an ark that carried all living things and saved them from a global flood? No. Is the story of Noah true? Yes. See, the issue here is reading these stories as they were intended and understanding their purpose. We have this like fight going on in our culture these days. It's like we have historians and scientists and geologists and astronomers and physicists. These guys live in the real world, right? They tell us what is real and what's actually going on. And that's all there is to the story. But did you just hear what I said? And that's all there is to the story? Let me rephrase that. The cosmos is all there is, or was, or ever will be. But see, that's crazy. We need an appreciation of the transcendent realm as well. We need poets and philosophers and theologians and writers and musicians. The solution to this battle between science and religion will not come when one side defeats the other. It will come when they learn how to dance. And that's what I'm after. In the same way that we have badly misunderstood the first book of the Bible, we have badly misunderstood the last. When I was growing up, it was all about the rapture. The idea was that Jesus was going to come back and just poof, all the people who had accepted Jesus into their heart were going to be whisked off to heaven, leaving the world for the Antichrist and all those who had been left behind, right? This is nonsense. And I want to show you a much better way to read the book of Revelation next week. In the podcast titled, Are You Ready for the Rapture? See you next week.
You can find the show notes at anchorpoint.org. Dr. Robertson offers free daily inspiration. If you would like to receive it, go to anchorpoint.org and click Daily Anchor Points. Curb Your Dogma is supported by the generosity of its listeners. To make a donation, go to anchorpoint.org and click Support. And thanks.